When the art day gets rough, you just gotta keep on punching. And here's your Thunder Punch Daily with Jersey Drozd.
Okay, let's try to do another one where I'm getting ready for work. Well, work, class. The class I teach while I do the check-in. I'm talking to you while I'm packing up my bags and shutting down my computers and gathering up my teaching materials. And as it happens, like today, I think I want to talk a little bit about teaching, or at least things that I think about in terms of comic storytelling as a result of doing a lot of teaching. I'm wrapping up my cables to my... Is it a laptop? It's not a laptop. It's my VioZ canvas, which is essentially a laptop that you can draw on. Whatever. I was just having a conversation with a buddy of mine today. Actually, I can say who it was. I don't have to hide that. It was actually a long ago. We were talking about teaching kids because he teaches... sorry, there's Velcro on my computer cable. He teaches too. And we were kind of comparing notes about some things, about, you know, some different struggles we run into with parts of the process that are that we find challenging to teach. And I almost want to go off on a tangent real quick, talk about the class I got to teach in like about 15 minutes. But I won't. I'm going to keep going. Let's grab my bag. Okay. So, with young people and with beginning artists, especially artists who have been... Like in the case of like older artists, like artists who have been trained to more in the school of drawing what you see versus drawing what you imagine, right? Like a lot of traditional art programs, at least when I was growing up, especially, that's how they operated, right? You put a still life up there and you draw it. I remember being a little dismayed. My first high school art class where the art teacher said, you know, draw whatever you want in the room. And I saw something across the room, and I thought it was one thing, but like something was kind of blocking my view, but it was something else. So I thought it was like, it looked like it was like a dragon mask. I'm like, oh, that's cool. I like dragons. So I started drawing this dragon mask. Teacher comes over, is like, well, you should try drawing something you see, not something you imagine. And I remember being a little bit like, oh, okay, I guess. Eventually, I did get value out of that too. I'm not going to say that like going to life drawing classes is a waste of time or anything, but I'm just saying as a kid, you know, I wanted to draw what I imagined more than I wanted to draw what I see. That's my bias. I guess I'm spelling out my bias. But anyway, I noticed that it's difficult sometimes with students to get them thinking about their characters in three dimensions. If they see it in three dimensions, they can draw it just fine. But getting them to, like, when I'm looking at their comic, I'm like, okay, well, these are all good shots, but would you consider looking down? Well, how would it change if we look down at this particular panel rather than looking up? And they're like, well, I can't figure that out. How do I work that out? How do I draw the character so that we're looking down at them? And then I noticed that, like, and this is years and years of playing with different approaches, styles, and, you know, techniques and lesson plans to try to get through to this particular problem. And I found that knowing why to do it tends to be a great way to get them motivated to or invested in trying it. What do I mean? At least the way I teach it, we look at a lot of examples of existing comics in the classroom, and I put them up on the screen. You know, I make slides of all these things, and you know, I take the pages out of context, and often I try to look for comics pages that are good examples that the kids don't necessarily know, that they're not necessarily familiar with. Because I don't want them to get hooked on... the question thing I start asking is, you know, well, how does this moment feel? Well, this moment feels intimidating. Why do you feel intimidated? Well, because the guy looks really big. Why does he look really big? Oh, well, we're looking up at him. Well, why would that change the way we feel? Oh, looking up at something tends to make it seem more powerful and intimidating. Really? Let's test this idea. I'm going to walk over to you. I'm going to stand over you. And then I'm going to come down, get on my knees and stand next to you. How does that change the way it feels? That kind of thing. But if the kids are familiar, if they're too familiar with the material, they'll sometimes say like, well, that part feels scary because we find out that guy is actually that other character's, you know, long lost relative and he's a murderer. You know, like if they've got like plot information, they'll use it to back up their point when that's not the point. Anyway, I think about this a lot, like in my own work, is like, and a lot of us have read, and if you haven't, you can check it out. It's actually a pretty decent book. It's called How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way. It's incomplete. In the past, I've always described it as propaganda. I think I'd amend that. I would say it's actually more of, it's an incomplete view. It's a heavily biased view. Propaganda in that, I would say it's more of, it's advertising for their particular style of storytelling, right? Which, I mean, let's face it, it works. And that's why I think it's actually a decent book. It's just that it's heavily leaned towards, like, do you want to draw dynamic action stories? Then yes, there's a lot in there for you. Do you want to draw something that's, like, more introspective, a little quieter, maybe even a little visually challenging on purpose? Then that book's not going to have much to offer. But, why was I going on that? Oh, I think about this a lot in my own work, and I think about this a lot with, like, training young people, is that there's a value to being able to turn a scene around, like a whole landscape around in your head in three dimensions, and not to go totally nuts with it all the time, right? Like, I just saw Michael Bay Mutant Ninja Turtle movie, the first one, which I was surprised. It was like, I was surprised that it felt like a Turtles movie, but holy moly, does that guy like to spin the camera around? And maybe this is me being an old guy, you know? It's like when they're going down that hill, on that snow hill, and like the camera's flying around everywhere because it can, because it's all, you know, computer assisted now and everything. Just like, whoa, give me a second to catch up. I don't even know what's going on anymore. It got a little too confusing for this old guy, but you don't necessarily want to do that, but, you know, having that as a tool in your chest, being able to say, being able to, like, I describe it for my kids as moment choice, meaning, are we close or are we far away? What's the viewing angle? Are we looking up? Are we looking down? What visual pieces are assembling the composition so as to feel like, oh, that feels like a very claustrophobic shot. What does it feel claustrophobic? Well, there's a lot of stuff in there, and our subject of the scene is very small and framed up by all of these foreground elements, right? Something like that. I try to, like, describe to my students as, like, this is the adjectives of your story, right? You don't tell me in a book that he felt frustrated. You describe the scene so as I feel that the character is extremely frustrated. Same thing in comics, except you're drawing it instead of writing it, right? So how do you, and that's why thinking about viewing angle and turning objects around in 3D in your head, I think, is so darned important in storytelling, because, gosh, I know I'm not the first to say this. This is old stuff, right? It's like, it's the vocabulary. It's the vocabulary, and having more words at your disposal means that you have more opportunities for richer, more compelling sentences, providing you know the meaning of those words. So if I say anesthetician, I'm like, wow, look at all the words I know. Do I know exactly what that is, right? So, like, how am I going to use it properly? Anybody who's ever seen the movie Goonies, they make humor out of that, where the kid keeps using big words incorrectly. Right, so knowing the why and the use cases for these tools is important. Also, so that, as they say, you can break them too. Right, you know the rules so that you can break the rules. Because the one thing, one of the many reasons I love comics so much, is that every new group of artists who comes in comes up with these new conventions that I've never thought of before. And I remember there was a fifth grader in one of my classes who drew a word balloon where, like, there were sound waves emanating out of the side of the balloon in the direction of the person they were shouting to. Now, was that the most elegant symbol in the entire world? Not terribly, but it was something I'd never seen before, right? And it totally worked, right? It wasn't incorrect, right? All right, I'm off to class. I'm off to teach youth class, and it's 10 kids, all ages, I think, 9 to 12. And we're working on computers now. The last couple weeks, we do digital illustration. I'm training them in Medibang Paint, because it's a free program. So they can download it at home. They can draw on their home machines. And it's like, before, I've been teaching in Manga Studio, which is an inexpensive program. But $40 is still quite a bit of money to ask a 9-year-old to spend. Whereas free, much more manageable. But this class is challenging in that you got 10 kids on a computer, and or on computers, all drawing at the same time. And when they run into problems, It's not like when you're drawing on paper where it's like, well, how do I draw this? Well, continue drawing the other parts, and I'll come help you draw that in a second while I help this other kid. These are situations where it's like, where did my pen go? Why can't I draw on this layer? Why is the text tool doing this? Like, this is a severe limitation of digital illustration, is whatever tool you've got is like the one ring to rule them all. And so if something happens, if something funny happens with it, you literally can't just move on and do something else while they wait for me to come. So I'm doing a lot of running back and forth between these kids. The last 3 weeks of this class, when we do the digital section of the class, boy, do I earn my money. I know I burned some calories in that session, but you know, like many of the stresses in my life, it's all really worthwhile, valuable stuff. So who am I? Jersey Droz, cartoonist and teaching artist. JDroz.com, BoulderandFleet.com. This is part of the Art Sound Off Challenge, where every day me and my buddy Rob Stenzinger challenge ourselves to check in every day with an audio component to the art that we make. The prompts and the ways to participate are all at ArtSoundOff.com. But if you just want to listen, the whole bunch of people have been participating in this thing. Go to Twitter and do a search for the Art Sound Off hashtag. And you can hear all the different voices who are playing along at this monthly challenge. It's been really fun to check in with a whole bunch of different people I've never heard from before. All right, I'll be back tomorrow with another Thunder Punch Daily. Until then, remember, everybody,
being the most powerful man in the universe isn't all that makes He-Man such a great hero. Being strong is fine, but there's something even better. In today's story, He-Man used something even more powerful than his muscles to beat Skeletor. You know what it was? If you said his brain, you were right. And just like a muscle, your brain is something you can develop to give yourself great power.